It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, what a win for the Guardians last night. You ever seen a walk-off catch? That was pretty amazing by Stephen Kwan, diving into the gap, robbing a soft line drive off the bat of Mauricio Dubon, and doubling up the runner at second base to end the game. 3-2 Guardians win in their fourth consecutive extra innings game. A game that they really sort of needed to win, and they came through, and Stephen Kwan did it on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, just a great night for Kwan. You know, the great catch, like you said, Joe, the double play to end it, and then, you know, in the top of the 10th, he doubles home the go-ahead and with the go-ahead and winning run. Really a big night for him. He goes, 3-for-5 in Tuesday's loss. He goes 2-for-2 and reaches base 5 straight times. We're seeing the emergence of, perhaps the best leadoff hitter in the American League.
Yeah, OPS of 915 entering the day on Thursday now for Stephen Kwan. We were talking before we started here. You said he's leading the league in batting average, base hits, and what else?
And runs.
And runs scored. So, and we're seeing that that power start to maybe emerge a little bit more. At least, total bases and slugging percentage over the last few days, he's had a bunch. Yesterday, he was a home run short of the cycle. Had a triple, an RBI triple in the fifth inning that scored Brian Rocchio. Just doing it at all facets and all phases of the game here. But I want to go back to that catch. I mean, he said, talking after the game, he said that, you know, he didn't even know where the runner on second was. He just did it by instinct. He sort of, dove for the ball, made the catch, didn't know he was going to catch it until he had it in his glove, and then doubled up the runner, Victor Caratini, who tried to get a little bit of a head start off of second base to score that tying run in the 10th inning. He won the game for him right there with a walk-off catch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Just a great catch. And, in talking to him after the game, Kwan was saying, the ball was coming in and out of the lights from the ballpark. He really didn't have a good read on it. He didn't know if he could get it. And he just dove for it. He had a good feeling about it, but he didn't know he caught it until it was in his glove. But the thing about that was, Joe, he didn't have sight of it all the way. You know, he said he was kind of in and out. He was trying to get every kind of angle or read on it that he could. And just a great effort by him. And then Andrés Giménez is screwing around, trying to fake step on second base. I'm not sure what he was doing, but it took him about 5 seconds to, make the force to end the double play. And everybody in the dugout, I don't think anybody knew it was if he caught it or not, and because no one really jumped out of the dugout right away because Giménez was screwing around before, completing the double play.
Yeah, well, watching that at home on TV and Matt Underwood doing the broadcast, and he was waiting to use his signature line, book it, when Jimenez stepped on the bag, and then Jimenez wouldn't step on the bag, and so he was like hesitating and hesitating. It was like building up all this anxiety, and everybody mm-hmm. watching at home. How likely is it that Jimenez maybe gets one in the ribs this evening if the Astros didn't like that kind of thing? I mean, that's one of those things you kind of don't screw around like that. You just step on the bag and you go celebrate with your boys, right?
Exactly. And, you know, Jimenez gets hit so many times with pitches anyways, you won't know if they're thrown at him or not, I guess, unless they really make an emphasis, you know, emphasize it. And Caratini was the hero from, you know, Tuesday night's game with the walk-off home run. And, you know, last night, you know, he's in the dugout when Kwan makes the catch or headed for the dugout. He got a little too aggressive on that one.
Well, and I kind of get it. I mean, that ball to Caratini, that ball looks like it's getting down, you know, for a base hit, and you've got to score on that if you're yeah. him at second base. So, I mean, he's got to go there. You can't blame him for getting doubled up in that situation. If that ball drops and he doesn't score, you know, you're yelling at him for a whole different set of reasons. But yeah, Jimmy's the last guy that you would expect to be like, you know, taunting or doing anything, you know, silly like that. I think he was more trying to be funny than anything else, I would assume. Or maybe he's, you know, trying to throw it up in Houston's face. I don't know. We'll see if that strategy backfires on him in tonight's game. But, you know, just going back to Kwan and talking about, you know, the offensive numbers speak for themselves right now. What, 7 3-hit games in the team's first 30 games. That's only been done, you know, 4 other times in franchise history, and most of those were in the 20s and 30s. You're talking about guys like Tris Speaker who have accomplished the feat of at least seven 3-hit games prior to, you know, the team playing 30 in a season. That's impressive. Is Stephen Kwan? You and I were talking before we started recording here. If the All-Star game was tomorrow, you would have to find a place for Stephen Kwan in that outfield, maybe even the starting outfield for the American League.
Yeah, Joe, I think you'd have to. You know, he's a different kind of outfielder. He's not a power hitter, but he's, you know, the classic leadoff hitter. He does everything you want a guy at the top of the order to do. He's hitting 360, Joe. He's got 45 hits. He scored 27 runs. He's hitting .429 on this trip. You know, a trip against, you know, some, you know, against, it started in Atlanta with really tough, you know, a really good Braves team. And I know the Astros are struggling, but they still have a potent offense. So, you know, he's doing it against some top level competition.
Yeah, you and I were talking, and, you know, I threw out maybe a comparison when you talk about classic leadoff hitter. You know, obviously, from people and from my generation, from around here, you say classic leadoff hitter, the name that pops into everybody's head is Kenny Lofton. But you didn't necessarily like that comparison, maybe because of, you know, power numbers or whatever. Why are Kenny Lofton and Stephen Kwan different, and why are Kenny Lofton and Stephen Kwan maybe a little similar?
Yeah, I think they're similar in that they both get on base. They both hit for a high average. You know, they both kind of give the pitcher and catcher concern when they do get on base. I think Kenny was probably a little more speed, a little more of a stolen base threat, developed some power toward, you know, to the middle part of his career. We still haven't, you know, we don't know if that's going to happen with Kwan, but, you know, those are I don't think Kwan is a stolen base threat that Lofton was.
Yeah. And that's also developing. The power is also developing a little bit more. I mean, you know, Kenny wasn't a guy who, you know, collected a lot of total bases, you know, in terms of, you know, doubles or slugging or anything like that. His first 2-3 maybe seasons, but sort of grew into that and grew into more of a threat that way. Defensively, Kwan is elite right now. Kenny was beyond elite in his day. So I can see maybe, you know, it's not a completely fair comparison. Obviously, Kenny played a lot longer and did a lot more things, you know, over his career. But if the first two and a quarter seasons or any sort of indication, Kwan's along that trajectory. What does this mean for his future? I mean, every, you know, three hit game he throws on there, every dazzling catch he throws up there and in left field, that just puts another zero on the price tag it's going to cost to keep him in Cleveland.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, this is, you know, they talked to his agents over spring training and the off season about an extension. Nothing got done. And then both sides decided to, halt negotiations once the regular season started. But this is a guy that doesn't come along very often. You don't see these type of hitters very often. And if Cleveland is serious about continuing to win and continuing to put good teams on the field, I would think you'd want to start at the top of the lineup and take care of your leadoff hitter. But we'll see how this goes. This is his third season. What, three more years to go to a free agency? A lot can happen between then and now, but, you know, he obviously has to be on their radar to sign an extension.
Well, I called up the baseball reference page that compares Stephen Kwan head-to-head with Kenny Lofton, and obviously this is a career comparison between the two, so all of Lofton's numbers are going to be skewed because of a 20-year career here. But just think about, you know, in a seventh of the number of seasons that Kenny played, Stephen Kwan's total WAR right now, baseball reference WAR, 10.7. Kenny Lofton finished his career at 68.4 WAR in about, seven times more games or seasons or whatever. So, there's a lot here to sort of chew up and digest. Obviously, the stolen base total is a lot different, but batting average, Stephen Kwan hitting .290 for his career. Kenny Lofton was a .299 hitter. On base percentage a little bit closer, .360 for Kwan, .372 for Lofton. But like you said, the slugging percentage definitely a lot different. Kwan's slugging percentage .396. Slugging percentage for Lofton, .423 for his career, but that power sort of developed later in his career. Total OPS about 40 points higher for Lofton, but I'm surprised Kenny's OPS below 800 for his career, right at 794. Kwan checks in at 756, which is still, it's pretty good. The only place Kwan does have Kenny beat right now is total OPS plus. It's 116 for Kwan, 16% higher than league average, and Kwan and Lofton at 107 there. So, but again, it's not a fair comparison at this point, but, you know, keep that kind of thing in mind if you're thinking about, the prototypical leadoff hitter, the guy that you want at the plate in those situations, even late in games. Kwan is still seeming to come through that way, and he's carrying this offense and leading this offense right now, along with guys like Josh Naylor and Jose Ramirez to a certain extent. He hasn't really hit his stride yet this year. We talked about, whether or not he could be an all-star, that remains to be seen, but, there's a little bit of an opportunity there. I think the center field and right field spots in the American League are going to be spoken for out of New York, but left field, there might be an opportunity.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. I think he's an all-star right now. He is. He's on that trajectory. This is a guy, like you were right, naming some stats, Joe, like you said, he's clutch. He went into last night's game hitting .333 with runners in scoring position. You know, for a leadoff hitter, that's, who doesn't get a lot of chances to drive in runs or to hit with runners in scoring position, that says a lot.
Yeah, that is real important. All right. As far as updates, news, anything coming out of last night's game, obviously a very important win for Cleveland in that, the fourth game in a row, they went to extra innings. You saw Tristan McKenzie go seven innings. And that completely gets overshadowed by the way the game ended and everything. But McKenzie gave them seven innings at a time when You know, you couldn't have him going three or four and taxing the bullpen even more. If McKenzie doesn't go seven last night, you know, somebody's losing a job this afternoon.
Yeah, it was just a great effort by Tristan. Like you said, seven innings, two runs, one walk, six strikeouts. He threw 90 pitches and 50 of them were fastballs, Joe. And the velo upticked a little. He was at right around 91, 92 miles an hour. You know, Carl Willis, the pitching coach, had said Sunday in Atlanta that in his previous start, Tristan had showed him the best fastball he'd seen all season. That was when he only went four innings against Boston. And he carried that into last night. And he really, you know, he kind of stretched out. That's his longest start of the season. And like you said, they really needed that after Carrasco only went four innings the night before.
Help could be on the way in terms of the bullpen, though. Obviously, they're super taxed right now. They're overused. But Sam Henches apparently threw a couple of innings the other night, and he's close to being ready to be activated off the injured list. What do you think of the opportunity for Sam Henches to maybe join this bullpen?
Yeah, he threw two scoreless innings last night in his final rehab appearance for Columbus. He got the win, in fact, in a 14-8 win over Toledo. And I think he'll be activated either Friday or Saturday, Joe, when the Guardians return home to open that series against the Angels.
14-8, what are they playing football out there?
They had 17 hits.
It's like the Buckeyes score. What the heck? Although the Buckeyes would not have a final score of 14-8 against Toledo, I think. If Henches is ready to join the bullpen, then who looks like they're the most vulnerable right now in terms of their spot out there?
Well, Joe, there's so many guys pitching well in that pen. It's a hard call to make, but. You know, they do have Pedro Avila sitting there, you know, kind of a long guy, you know, that really, you know, kind of pitches in blowouts one way or the other. He's made a couple of appearances, but I would think he's probably the guy on the bubble right now.
Yeah, it makes the most sense to me. There will, of course, be, you know, the random keyboard jockey on Twitter who jumps on and says, oh, well, they should send Hunter Gaddis down or something like it based on his last three outings. And that's just crazy talk. I don't ascribe to that. The guy was nails for the first, you know, 3 weeks of the season and he hit a rough patch. Stephen Vogt's got to do a good job of getting him through this and getting him back because he's going to be important to this bullpen down the stretch.
Yeah. That's the last thing you need to do with a guy like Gaddis. First year in the full-time reliever, you know, he gave you 13 straight scoreless appearances. And, you know, yes, he blew three straight saves on this trip, but, you know, I think you got to stick with him. I mean, Vogt stuck with him Vogt sent him out there for three straight games. You know, he had that confidence in him. And I think he'd have to do quite a selling job if they had to send Gaddis down, but I don't see that happening.
Other quote-unquote injury news, Eli Morgan getting ready to head out for a rehab assignment as well?
Yeah, they talked to Eli yesterday, pitching coach Carl Willis. He threw a bullpen on Tuesday. Everything went well, so he will start his rehab assignment this weekend with Columbus.
All right, just so you know, for our listeners, if you sign up for our subtext subscription texting service, $3.99 a month to get Guardian subtext. You can get updates on all of the roster moves, injury news, and updates on, you know, what we think of Stephen Kwan and you know, the opportunity to tell us if you think he compares favorably to Kenny Lofton there on subtext. Go to cleveland.com/subtext or send a text message to 216-208-4346. Down on the farm, you talked about Columbus putting up 14 runs last night. It's time for Kyle Manzardo Corner, where we check in and see how Kyle Manzardo's doing. Hoynsie, you had another good night.
You're not kidding, Joe. We just said, you know, the final score, The Clippers beat the Mud Hens 14-8 last night. Manzardo goes 3-for-4 with two doubles and is another home run. I think he's got 8 right now. He wasn't alone. Jonathan Rodriguez hit his 6th home run. Daniel Schneeman hit his 6th home run. George Valera is back in the lineup after being injured in spring training. He went 2-for-3. So everything is coming together for the Clippers, especially with Manzardo, Joe. And he's knocking on the door. It's just a matter of when the Guardians open it.
Yeah, it's the Ring doorbell. They can see him. He pops up on their phone, and it's Kyle Manzardo again. George Valera making his season debut at AAA, also a really positive sign. This is a guy who can't seem to get out of his own way in terms of injuries, but him being on the field now he's just got to develop and produce and maybe become an option for the outfield somewhere down the line. Speaking of an option for the outfield somewhere down the line, the Guardians, as we all know, have the number one overall pick in the July draft coming up. There've been a couple of candidates sort of trying to separate themselves from sort of the pack there. Really, the guy that profiles for exactly what the Guardians need would fit, right into, where Cleveland sort of is lacking maybe in their farm system and in their development over the last several years, is a right-handed, a true right-handed power bat. And right now, the guy who's leading all of NCAA Division I, Charlie Condon, the 6'6", 216-pounder from Georgia. He has 30 home runs. He's taking on, South Carolina or either Vanderbilt or South Carolina this weekend. And he's just assaulting the NCAA record books and Georgia record books in terms of home runs, leading the NCAA in batting average. He's got a slugging percentage that's up over 1,000, Hoynsie. These are astronomical numbers. And as the season starts to head towards the tournament here, as they've got about 2 or 3 weeks left in the college season, he's going to start seeing a little better competition, a little bit higher level of pitching. But Charlie Condon starting to separate himself from guys like Jack Caglione in Florida and Travis Bezzana as guys who could be that number one overall pick.
Yeah, Joe, he's high on everybody's draft board. The Guardians know about him. This is a draft, kind of loaded with college hitters. The main talent of this draft is in college hitters. They have some pitchers, but, and this is the first time Cleveland has had the number one pick in franchise history. And Joe, they've got a $10 million slot value to assign whoever they pick with the number one pick. So this is a big draft, and you got to get it right when you're picking one-on-one, right, Joe?
Right. Yeah. I mean, in terms of performance and what he's doing out on the field right now, I think you can't deny that everything is there. It's what makes a number one pick. The only thing I could see that would steer them off of a guy like Charlie Condon would be, if they sit down and interview him and they don't get a good feeling in terms of his work ethic or his personality, or if he doesn't fit with that kind of thing, because everything else points to this is the kind of guy who, an ESPN story the other day had him. A scout said he's a unicorn. He's a generational college player. 6'6", 216 pounds, could probably still fill out that frame. I mean, you're talking about an Aaron Judge size type player if that's the case, and puts the ball in play, hits home runs, 1,000 slugging percentage. I mean, these are things that make you stop and take notice. If you pass on a guy who goes on to become the next Aaron Judge, you're going to regret that for a very long time.
Yeah, Joe. And the The thing that the only thing that could stop them from taking Condon is, you know, they've got that $10 million slot value for the first pick. You know, what if they can't come to terms with him on a signing bonus, or they decide, okay, we can, if we don't get Condon, we can get two players or three players by using, you know, some of that slot value, you know, on other picks. So, you know, that comes into this thing as well.
Is this the time to get creative with your financing and your selection, or is it the time to, you know, take a guy who could go on to be a longtime superstar player? If you pass on that's fine, you know, whatever. Cincinnati, I'm sure, would take him, or, you know, Colorado would definitely take him. But if you're doing that because you want to split the bonus pool money and, you know, maximize however many players you can get, it sort of, you know, it screams kind of playing the poor card even, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, teams have done this, you know, Baltimore has done it. You know, they split that, the bonus pool for the number one pick. So the teams have done that in the past. But sometimes, Joe, you just don't want to overthink it. You got the number one pick, take the best player.
That's and that's where I'm coming from here. And if he, you know, separates himself over the next 3 weeks or 3 to 4 weeks or, you know, month, and it really just looks like he's the obvious choice, then, you know, go with it and don't look back. I don't know how much he's a redshirt sophomore. So, you know, there's a possibility that he could, you know, go back to Georgia for another year. Not likely, but, you know, the NIL thing comes into play there as well. You know, could it be more financially lucrative for him to return to Georgia with NIL money as opposed to taking a $10 million, you know, signing bonus with Cleveland? Not a likely scenario in any case, but. You know, the possibility of something like that out there, you might have to pay him.
$10 million is $10 million, Joe. That speaks that speaks pretty loudly to me if I'm Charlie Condon.
All right, Hoynesy, that'll wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. One more game to go in Houston tonight. Logan Allen on the mound against Spencer Arrighetti. How do you like that? There's a name for you. We've got some great names we've been coming across lately. Spencer Arrighetti, 0-3, 10.96 ERA for Houston. Logan Allen has 3 wins for the Guardians on the mound. We will check in with you tomorrow after the series wraps up in Houston.
Good deal, Joe.